welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
All right. Well, we are going to get started. Thank you, Mr. Tom Petty. We appreciate you. Now, you might have noticed that there is pink paper in front of you. Has this row of chairs been here this whole time? Oh, I'm like, did we add a row of chairs? I didn't see a bunch. I'm going insane. All right, put the coffee down. Wow, okay. So you might have noticed that there's some, or maybe I'm just closer to it. So you have pink paper in front of you, which we're going to be using as a part of our message at the end. But where I want to start is we are continuing our series called In Relation. And the whole idea, and you can get more of the messages at neighborhood.love as well, but the whole idea is that we're relational people. And part of being relational people means that we're not an island in and of ourselves, but we are in relation to the things and the people and the concepts in this world. That if we think, well, other people's political views really don't matter, they don't shape our reality, is clearly misinformed, because when you walk into your workplace and you might see a political sign or a sticker, you might have some feelings, regardless if you're a bleeding heart liberal or a conservative, right? You're going to see something, it might trigger something. And when things that impact our feelings impact our reality, shapes how we show up in a room. If you think the way that people think about God, we live in a pluralistic society, meaning there's infinite ways of thinking about reality, politics, economics, and also about theology and about God. And if you think, well, it doesn't really matter what I think about God, well, if you've ever been in like a Thanksgiving meal and someone brings up the topic of religion, how does that go over, right? In my family, great, right? People love when the pastor gets a talk at Thanksgiving. I got a lot of things to say about Hezekiah. So, but if you're in a workplace and you found out your boss thought about God, and you're like, that's wonderful, but then they start sharing about who's in, right? Who is the select few, or who is the sacred and who is the holy, that also make kind of references about who's not and who's excluded and who's out, that might shape the way you show up to that business meeting, right? Of what you speak of, what you don't. So, like, we are in relation to the things that we want, the things that we love, the things that we grieve, as well as what other people are processing. And if we are aware of how we are in relation to things, then we can show up in a room with purpose and on purpose. And we can navigate things that are life-giving to us and maybe even embody those values and extend those to other people. So today, if you got this wonderful thing called an email that I wrote, I totally forgot I sent it because people are like, we're talking about love today. I'm like, well, obviously we're talking about love. Hello, right? And I'm like, oh, the email, I talked about how I love love and I watch movies about love and my kids watch me watch movies about love because they like to mock me for crying about movies about love, right? And my friend Weaver's in the back because he knows it's true, right? I do love crying about movies. I like crying in general, but that's not why I'm talking. And, oh, we're talking about how are we to respond in relation to the things we love. And we're going to be talking and reading a verse out of Ephesians chapter 3. Now, I like to give some Bible nerds a shout-out once in a while. I happen to be in that club of Bible nerds. And Ephesians was written by, a tribute to a guy named Paul. And there's a lot of biblical scholars that believe that Paul really didn't write this letter, right? And I bring this up for a very specific reason. Because there's people in the Bible nerd world and in our church, they're saying, well, if Paul didn't write it, then should we not take it seriously? Like, should we just, like, throw away? And if you have read the Bible, or other people have read the Bible for you and told you what the Bible says, Paul is one of those characters. You're like, do we still need Paul? And I'd argue, yeah, we can. If Paul wrote it or Paul didn't write it, the church has found inspiration through this book of Ephesians for a long, long time. And has been used for love and inclusion and expansions of the way we think about God in life? Yes. Clearly, has the Ephesians been used to hurt other people and discriminate and bring violence on people's bodies? Yeah, obviously, right? Does that mean we throw it out? But then we'd have to throw out the entire Bible. Instead, maybe we can find better ways of reading what Paul said, maybe have wider concepts of what this people who maybe wrote Ephesians or Paul wrote or someone else, we can still find inspiration, right? And I forgot to tell you why. Paul, in the, or the person who wrote Ephesians, has a very different tone in when they're talking to the church in Thessalonia, right? Like the Bible study that Michelle's going to be reading. Paul will address very specific things and use kind of words. He does it in Rome. He does it in the church in Corinth. And when you get the church in Ephesus, he's like going through like these bigger, broad concepts, right? Which we're going to hit on in a little bit. And the time that it was written was probably like late 1st century, early 2nd century. And it's for this church in what we call Turkey. And if you want to know about the earliest parts of the Christian church, you have to look at the church in Ethiopia and the church in Turkey. If you've ever been to Turkey, you're going to see the history of the Christian church all around. And it's fascinating. And we don't usually think of like the beginnings of Christianity. At least I didn't when I learned about Ephesus and about in Ethiopia. Oh, it's so rich. So Ephesians, things they hit on, big concepts. Imagine this, is that there's these forces of love that are so much wider than us. And equally, there's these forces of destruction that we might find not just elsewhere, but we might even experience within. And how do we wrestle with what we believe to be good or love or ultimate and still feel these poles of this tension of things that our ego might be craving for? How do we like navigate that? And Paul then talks about the headship of Christ, the majesty of who this person of Jesus is, and this transformational power is found in that love. And if we're willing to embody it, if we're willing to, the word I use often, awaken to it, how it can lead us into this transformational growth in love. It's so incredibly rich, but he has a strong emphasis on when you experience love, you experience God, the majesty of Christ, it does something in you and through you. And in chapter 3, which we're reading out of verse 17 through 19, it says this. Instead of telling you about it, I shall just read it to you, or we can read it together. It says this. And I ask him that with both feet planted firmly in love, that you'll be able to take in with all the followers of Jesus the extravagant dimensions of Christ's love. Reach out and experience the breadth, test its length, plumb the depths, rise to the heights, live full lives, full in the fullness of God. So Paul here is saying that this love is not just this intellectual exercise. Whoever Jesus is, whatever this, what they talk about in the Gospels, the kingdom or the kingdom of heaven, Paul is making this plea. It's not just something to be like thought of or known. It's something to be embodied. It's something to be experienced. And he has this urgent message almost like go out and discover it. Test it. It's like double dog dare you of wherever you think this love is, wherever you think this transformation is. He's saying, yeah, that's here, but what if it's also like wildly over there? And what if it's like everywhere? And if that's true, then you can go out and experience it. You can go test it. It's this very playful language, which is quite different than how a lot of people, when they think about church, they think about religion, and religion often feels very closed-minded. Feels very like, don't ask these questions, ask these questions. And these things are inbounds, but these things are out of bounds. Paul is saying, like, why are we playing inbounds or out of bounds? Let's just go play. Let's go experience. Which is very, very similar, or this guy named Schleiermacher, right, who is this theologian in, like, the 11th, 12th, 13th century, somewhere around there. And I discovered this theologian in this studying the history of Christian theology, which is like sounds horribly boring to maybe some of you. It is so awesome. I loved it. And the whole idea is mainly white men, European men, right? Oh, thank you. All right, have set these arguments, essentially, about how we think about God. And each one studied each other and then built off of it. And so when we think about the history of the church, it's not like this clean, easy little graph, like, oh, we're just growing and like having transformation, awakenings. It's just like, oh, here we go. In fact, it's like all over the place. And we studied about how did Anabaptists come to be, and Calvinists, and Greek Orthodox, and Roman Catholic, and even progressive Christians. You can see how they both like beg, borrowed, and steal from each other to come up with these concepts. And it is so good. And the encouraging thing is, if you're here and you're asking questions about God or ultimate reality or the Bible or life, like these theologians and philosophers have been asking these questions for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, which for me felt very encouraging. And also a little ding to my ego, because I'm like, am I the first person to think of this question? You're like, oh, no, someone like 500, like they thought about this. But which is good, because these questions then are not abnormal. There's something inside of us collectively as humans that want to connect to something larger than ourselves. And Schleiermacher said, we can't, like Paul, this exercise of knowing God is not just intellectual. We have to go experience it. So he's one of the people, he's the father of, the beginner of progressive Christianity. Because Schleiermacher said, well, if we experience God, then why wouldn't we go out and read poetry? Why wouldn't we go out and drink wine? Why wouldn't we go out and dance? Why wouldn't we go out and make new friends? In every interaction, we're having new discoveries, and new discoveries is new expressions of God, and new expressions of God is new ways of embodying, extending, and knowing, and transforming love. So there's where other theologians and philosophers wanted a very guarded, very rigid way of thinking that's inbounds and out of bounds. There's these other philosophers who are like, well, why not dream? Which is like where I live. And I love that idea of the world is a benevolent place. Actually, in Ephesians 3, Paul talks about right before this, he's talking about how this God is not a God of scarcity. It is a God of benevolence. It is a God of infinite love and knowing if we're willing to go out and experience it. Which begs this question. We're going to do two things. We're going to talk about a metaphor, and then we're going to do an exercise with pink pieces of paper if you choose to participate. So the metaphor is that, or the idea, the metaphor goes with this. When I was a kid, I loved Little League baseball. Did anyone else like playing baseball or softball growing up? Right? Now, I'm convinced that I should be a professional baseball player. And my team, in Carlton, Minnesota, the Mop Shop, because we were sponsored by the Mop Shop, we made it to the Little League World Championships. And by Little League World Championships, I mean we made it to Little League Championships in Carlton, Minnesota. All right, I think there was four teams. But we made it to the championship, and I was a starting second baseman, and I was excited. My whole life was in front of me, and my parents, who are sitting right here, if you're watching on the camera, they're right over here, right? They ruined my baseball career by making me go to my Uncle Anthony's wedding in Boston. And as a kid, I didn't have a fully developed brain to understand that this wedding was probably planned a year ago, and they had no idea that it was going to fall in a championship baseball game that I was a starting second baseman that I didn't get to play in because I had to go to my uncle's wedding, right? So, yeah, there's that. Thanks, Mom and Dad. So, but as a kid, right, as a kid, I loved baseball. And so when you discover love, is that love a constant for all time? Does that mean once I discover something that brings me deep, deep joy in this season of my life, does that mean it has to last forever and ever? And in some things we feel like, yeah, well, actually, in most things where we find love, we think this should last forever. And sadly, it doesn't, right? Because then baseball was done, right? Because after, like, fourth grade, I had to play, like, real baseball. Turns out I wasn't so great. So then I wanted to play softball in college. And my friend, who's in the very, if I'm going to highlight my parents, my friend in the very back, Jeremy Weaver, ruined softball for me because he just kept saying, Chris, move two steps to the left. And I'm like, don't tell me what to do. And he kept telling me what to do. Secondly about softball is I was afraid that the ball was going to go through my head. That was the real fear, right? Because it's so fast. And then I'm like, I'm going to have a ball through my head. I don't know how many ACLs are in my body, but I think there's like 1,000, and I'm going to break all 1,000 of them, all right? That's, I know we only have 10 ACLs. So, but I had this, like, I love baseball, so I'm like, so I should love softball. And then church softball, I tried that, and it turns out that's a very less competitive, and it turns out I'm way too competitive for church softball. I made a friend of mine cry because they didn't round third fast enough, and it turned out I was the only one yelling. Everyone else is like, we're having fun. I'm like, fun is when we win. Losing's how we die. And so, yeah, I was a pastor too, so that's great. But when we discover things we love, do they have to be a constant? And there's something inside of us that really wants to be. And there's this guy named Rob Bell. And he gave this analogy like a long, long time ago that really brought me encouragement. I hope it can bring encouragement to you. Because the whole idea is, why do we love the things we love? And how do we love them? How do they bring us joy? And how are we supposed to be in relation to the things we love? And how are we supposed to be in relation to the things that we once loved that now have transformed, or we've transformed into something else? And he used this idea of that we are floating on this river. Oh, my friend Bree put this together. It's so good, right? You're on this inner tube and you're on this river. And people go crazy about floating down rivers. Has anyone ever gone inner tubing down a river before, right? You have your own inner tube. And you know it's going to be an experience on this river when you realize they have inner tubes just for coolers, right? So people want to sit in the water and have the things they want to drink right next to them and never have to get off the inner tube at all, even though they're drinking a couple 13, 14 drinks. And I'll let you fill in the gaps of why they like this, all right? And so you're going down this river, and in our life early on, we realize that we're in this river with people around us. Maybe it's your family. Maybe it's your friends from school. And maybe you're playing Little League Baseball and your parents don't make you quit baseball to go to a wedding. And so you know they love you. And so you're going down this river together and you're like, this is so great. And it's comforting because this is like your people. And then as you get a little bit older, all of a sudden you realize, oh, maybe you have an older sibling that's going off to college or going to join the Peace Corps. And all of a sudden that safe inner tube has hit a different channel and now has gone off. And you could still see them, but they're no longer in your stream. And you finally realize, oh, the stream I'm on is maybe my stream or our stream. But you look around and there's infinite streams. And there's all these channels going in and out and ways for people to come and join a stream, but also ways for people to leave that stream. And as you get older, you have your family, then maybe you have like your college friends, or then you have like your work friends. And for me, in like my 20s, my early 30s, I was in a system, an evangelical system, that was very, very black and white. And if you've ever been in a place that, and it's kind of a joke, but it's not really a joke, but it's almost cultish, right? And you were in it, and you're like, well, we can't call it a cult because I was in it, so we have to just call it like a place. But where they either told you directly or indirectly told you what's good or bad, in or out, black or white. And it is intoxicating to be in a place when a group of people get to tell you what's right or wrong, because then you know how to go down that stream. You're floating in solidarity with all these people. Then you notice there's a group of people that maybe break off from that group of tubes. And maybe they're a little further ahead. And so you feel this pressure, I better speed up. And so you speed up to get next to them. And as you speed up, you look behind you, and there's people who are slowing down. And so you throw your leg in the water. You know that trick? You throw your leg in the water so you can just, like, slow down. And you're like, hey, what's up? Yeah, I'm just next to you. No big deal, right? And you feel this tension of, well, is it my job to keep these people together, right? You know you're like the middle child if you feel like you have to do, right? Family systems, if you feel like, no, I have to keep these people together, and you convince yourself it's for their good, but really it's for your own security. And all of a sudden that group of friends or that person, that someone that you love or that concept or that political idea or that way you thought about money or your mental health or the way you thought about your physical body or so important to you, all of a sudden changes and it enters into a new stream and you watch it. And it's maybe something or someone you loved and you're like, well, do I go chase them or do I have to stay on my stream? And there's grief and there's loss. And now that I'm in my mid-40s, I've learned that there's going to be groups of people, friends, or even people that I love, maybe I've loved for a long time, for whatever reason, they've changed, I've changed, we've changed, culture has changed, but where they need to go on a different stream, or maybe I need to go on a different stream, and there's pain, and there's loss in that. In a lot of the conversations I have with people is usually around, how could something I once loved, God, Jesus, the church, my husband, my wife, my partner, my job, my parents, my in-laws, my friends, my childhood friend, how can it be where it's so different? Like, what changed? And we could put a lot of energy trying to dissect and get an idea of why, and that can be really good, but I've learned in some spaces, things just change. And how are we going to be in relation of when something we love begins to float away? Or maybe we've put so much energy in dropping that foot to slow down that you're looking ahead like, I don't know how long I can do this. And you feel guilty. Like when we're in those spaces of things that we've loved that have changed and evolved, it can feel confusing. It can feel exciting. It can feel a lot of grief. And we're not always the best at knowing of when to speed up or slow down, or even how to manage, or even the process of why we love or how we love or what we love. But we're in this stream. And now I'm pointing back to this. What Paul is saying is, you're in the stream. Can you enjoy it? Can you recognize it? Can you be content with it? And also, like, wherever this love brings you, explore it. Talk to the people that are in the stream with you. Grieve when things change. And maybe that season that was so good in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s or your 50s, maybe it's that friend you had forever that brought you so much joy. And now things have changed and you recognize this is becoming toxic. Maybe it's someone that you shared a relationship with or maybe started a family with. Man, the amount of times I've talked to people who, and I am for love, and I am for healthy relationships, but when relationships get toxic, and you say, well, what does toxic mean? Only you can answer that, right? We get one shot. The amount of people I've talked to who feel so much, and you should feel pain and grief of saying, this person that I loved, I don't know if I can do this any longer because something that is in you or something that's in them or something is in both of you. And to get clear is hard and it's messy. But love is worth it, right? And those are painful decisions. Those are painful separations. Those are painful having to distance yourself. Maybe you have to set up boundaries and you think, I'm setting up boundaries because we love one another and I'm worth being treated this way. I'm worth being respected. I'm worth being thought of. And so when you set up that boundary, you have, and hopefully there's a lot of us that have set up boundaries. At least me, I'm an eternal optimist, set up that boundary. I'm like, this is going to be great. They're going to respect me because they love me. And what I've learned is they don't love me. They use the word of love to control me. And that hurts. And they didn't realize until they set up that boundary thinking, no, they're going to do this. And when they don't or they keep pressing that boundary, you're like, oh, this was never about love. This was always about control or power. And it's sad, right? So the whole idea is, are we aware of where we're at in this stream? If Paul is saying, test the love of God, like know the love of God, go and expand it. It's all around us. Are we aware of where we're at? Before we explore it somewhere else, before we test the boundaries of it, are we aware of what we love? Which leads us to the end. Now, in front of you, there's a pink piece of paper. You can use your phone. You can use your beautiful brain if you'd like, right? I put that in front of you as an option. I like writing things down. During like my seminary classes, other people are typing, and I'm like the old guy like writing things on a piece of paper, right? So I'm going to ask you a series of three questions, and I'm going to put some music on. And if you are an adult or a kid, you are more than welcome to do this. I'm going to ask you one. I'm going to start with one question. Let me get the music up. The first one, the whole idea of this exercise is there's no right answers. I'm not going to make you come up on camera with the microphone and say, all right, sir, you're welcome to come up. I want you to read everything you wrote down. You're like, I don't want to. Like, get on that microphone. I'm not going to do that. At the end, I'm going to invite anyone who wants to share what surprised them, what they discovered, something like that. And you only have to share what you want to share. But stream of consciousness, you see this question, I want you to write down as many things that come to mind, not just what you think you should answer, right? Just what comes to mind, because I think it might surprise you. First question is this. I'd like you to write down for a couple seconds all the things that come to mind when you hear the words, what do you love? And nothing like Bon Iver as we talk about love. All right. You got a good list? Okay, now the next question. I'd like you to, however you wrote it down, I want you to next to it or underneath it or make little lines attached to it. Like for me, I put down coffee. First thing in mind. What do I love? I actually really like espresso, all right? I want you to write down next to what you love. And you can do this for as many or as little as you want. And then I want you to answer the question with that specific thing, how do you love it? And whatever words come to mind of how you understand the word how you do something, trust that feeling in your side yourself. Okay. You guys doing all right? You got some thoughts down? Last question, and you can take as much time as you need. You have what you love. Like I put down coffee. Then how do you love it? I put down, I smell it. I look forward to the taste of bitterness, and I like the warmth that it brings. I hold it, I consume it. Lastly, is I want you to answer the question. Same thing. If you have a concept, like a word, how, what, and why. To the best of your ability, what do you love? How do you love it? And why do you love? All right, you guys got some things now. You can keep jotting as I buy time, I keep talking. I'd like you to look at your list, wherever you're at. I could turn this music down. And as you look at the words, like for me, I wrote down, what do I love? I love my wife, Nikki. And how do I love her? I love her. What did I write? I tell jokes. That's how I love my wife. That's the first thing. I tell jokes to her. That's why I love her. I sing with her. I laugh with her. I walk with her. And then under the why, I've done this like 5 times the past 2 weeks, and I'm still surprised when I write down what comes to mind. But I said that why I love my wife is that I feel immense joy. I feel complete. Thank you, Tom Cruise. I feel known, and this is the one that surprised me. I feel beautiful. why I love my wife is when I'm with her, I really do feel beautiful. I feel not just beautiful as like an image, but I feel beauty. That surprised me. So what I want you to do is look at your list, and if it's one thing and the how and the why, is there any phrases that come to mind when you look at those words? Maybe like a sentence or 2 to 5 word phrase. Maybe there's something in there that is asking, inviting, or demanding that you might say something or speak something or do something with that love. And if something comes to mind, write it down. All right. Now, as you look at your list, as you're wrapping it up, is there anything, maybe what you described and what you loved, or how? Was there anything surprising to you? Maybe something that you're intrigued at that it came out of you? Or anything else that you want to share about maybe what you discovered or learned? Would anyone like to share? Yes. Oh, you can say it right from right there. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Nice. That's awesome. Whoa. You should be preaching right now. Yes. That was beautiful. Melody? Harmony? Melody? Destiny. I was not even close. Destiny's Child provides sick melodies. That's where I was going. Destiny shared that, for those who are watching online, do you mind if I try? Just shared that all these things that she looked for love to reciprocate, and what she discovered in the phrase is that all the love she needed was already within. That was beautiful. It's almost like Jesus talked about that like a lot. That's awesome. All right. Does anyone else want to share maybe something that surprised you, a phrase that comes to mind, or a discovery? Yeah, Sarah. Well, let me just, for those who are listening, Sarah said she loves pens at work. I like that. Yeah. That's awesome. Sarah said that she wrote down pens at work and was surprised at all the things that you don't have any. I went through, put pens in almost every. Oh, Sarah, I am so sorry. We have the best pens, too. They're so great. But then she talked about how everything is connected. That's beautiful. What a beautiful thing. Does anybody else want to share? You'll try, Dana. Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. So the idea of we love the idea of keeping all the same inner tubes around us, but if we never went on new streams or other people on new streams, wouldn't have new experiences with other people or concepts or ideas. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Does anybody else like to share? Denny, let's go downtown.
Well, first off, I would put down the trip out east.
The thing you love is Chris missing a baseball game.
I did the same thing that everybody else did, your children and all of those things that start in short cage.
Yeah.
Now, who have been dead for many years, and you kind of take it for it did a nice job at first. And you feel like it's a great job, the time they put in the job. And you never, I don't think, I said, hey, Mom, love you every time I went out to the door.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. What Denny shared was that he's surprised at putting down his parents for those who are watching online. Yeah. 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 That's wonderful. Zoe. Yeah. 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 That's wonderful. Thank you, Zoe. Zoe, to sum it up, just talk about the power of gratefulness and how it's easy to forget. It really is. That is a sacred art. Does anybody else like to share before we wrap up? Yes, Michelle. You're welcome. That's wonderful. That's so good. Michelle talked on, to summarize, the idea of big, large questions and critical thinking and being with people who can sit with you in that process with you, not always having the right answers, but willing to be on that journey with you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, thank you, Michelle. Thank you. I do love hearing how people love me. My ego never gets so tired of that. All right, is there anyone else who'd like to share before we wrap up? Okay. So here's what I encourage you to do. It's not going to be a test. But if there's something that is surprising or there's something, a phrase that comes to mind, maybe there's the universe, maybe it's God, maybe it's something within you that might be inviting you to tell that person, that concept, or maybe even God, of what you love, how you love it, and why. Because as humans, we're actually pretty good at the what and sometimes the how. One thing that we fail to do is to come into contact of the why. Because the why is what drives the how and the what. The what and the how never drives the why. So if we lose touch of why do we love God, or why do we love ourselves, why do we love big questions, why do we love playfulness, why do we love stealing pens from work that Sarah confessed, right? Why do we love these things? And when you come in contact, then you can speak to it. And when you can speak to it, then you can experience, and the people around you can experience as well. So I'm going to pray, and then we're going to be done. And if you'd like to talk or process or pray, I'd love to do that with you. And if you have any questions about the small group, about Thessalonians, Michelle will be here as well. Let's pray. So God, we thank you for the time that we get to connect and process about what and how and why we love. And I thank you for the invitation of what we read in Ephesians of how there is this urgency, there is this action of moving and exploring and embodying and extending this love. So we highlighted parents, as we highlighted coffee, how we discover the love of what we need is already within. I ask, Holy Spirit, that you will continue to stir up those feelings and those thoughts and those dreams and the power and the grief and the loss and also the new opportunities. Amen. Enjoy the rest of your week.